Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our podcast that started in part one. We detailed the latest developments in the athletic saga of Hoffman Center employee Grimaldi Vargas, who is actually a dispensary manager and runs the Hoffman Center store for us and is the friendly voice that you often hear if you call the Hoffman Center to order your supplements. She also takes down your orders from the internet, and she's very, very busy indeed stocking our store with the latest supplements that I handpick, of course, with input from Layla Mutin, who's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. So you can listen to part one and learn about her personal transformation. I actually wrote about it in the Hoffman Center Intelligent Medicine newsletter, and you can find it at drhoffman.com. The article is entitled From Wraith to Warrior, and she's doubling down on her exploits by planning to complete this weekend an even more grueling Spartan race. And she talks a little bit in part one about her personal transformation from 74 pounds to, I believe it's now 96 pounds of muscle and grit and determination. And this is a problem that some people encounter. The problem is underweight. It was our clinical focus a couple of months ago, how people can overcome underweight. So I recommend that you go back through our podcast archives and check that one out if you or a loved one suffer from inability to gain healthy weight. Lots of people are overweight, but a small percentage of the population struggles mightily to gain weight. That's a serious problem. Sarcopenia, loss of muscle, it especially occurs in people suffering from illnesses, but also generally occurs as people age. And sarcopenia is something that we want to fend off because it's associated with a risk of dying. We also did an interview recently with the author of a book entitled The Obesity Paradox. And what he's saying in that book is that people who are underweight or even at optimal weight, especially past a certain age, or with certain medical conditions, they're at higher risk of dying. So having a healthy reserve, particularly extra muscle mass, seems to be associated with wellness and survival. So therefore, I'm going to focus now on one of the keystones to the progress that we make with patients who are underweight, and something that Grimaldi attributes much of her success to, which is whey protein. Whey protein is something that you can find in big, huge vats at health food stores. It's a popular item in the sports nutrition section. So what's the deal? Why are athletes buying huge vats of whey protein to enhance their athletic performance? Is it just a placebo effect? What are the scientific bona fides of whey protein? So we'll delve into that subject next. First of all, milk is divided into two main proteins, casein and whey, and another word for the type of protein that's found in whey is lactalbumin. And you can actually distinguish the two by means of a little nursery rhyme. Little Miss Muffet sat in her tuffet eating her curds and whey. In the old days, they used to offer people curds which were from curdled milk, part of the fermentation process, and curds a little bit like cottage cheese. That's mostly casein. And you can take curds and you can mold it into cheeses and ferment it, and that's the basis of the cheese industry. And then the whey, well, buttermilk is an example of whey. And not that many people these days drink buttermilk. It's sort of a thin, watery mix. But it's also the source for whey. Whey protein can be separated from the casein in milk, or it is formed as a byproduct of cheese making. It's the liquid runoff that you get when you make cheese. And the nice thing about whey protein, as compared to other types of protein, rice protein or soy protein, is that whey protein or even egg protein. Whey protein is considered a complete protein. Egg is a little closer to whey protein in its completeness than soy, which lacks some of the critical amino acids. There are 9 essential amino acids. Whey protein contains all 9 essential amino acids. And in addition, it's for those who are concerned about lactose content, it's low in lactose or milk sugar. And therefore, it's also low in carbohydrates. So it is a low-fat, low-carbohydrate, relatively low-calorie version of protein that is easily assimilable, tastes good, mixes in water, and is convenient if you want a dollop of extra protein. So let's take a look at composition and forms of whey protein, which are detailed in a nice article in medicalnewstoday.com. Whey protein is a mixture of beta-lactoglobulin, alpha-lactoalbumin, bovine serum albumin, and immunoglobulins. So the nice thing about that is, well, it sounds like a lot of gobbledygook to you, but the important part is the immunoglobulins. The immunoglobulins are actually immune-enhancing, and they may be preserved in the, you know, if whey is properly processed and made easily assimilable. There are 3 primary types of whey protein concentrate, whey protein isolate, and whey protein hydrolysate. What our favorite product at the Hoffman Center consists of is whey protein isolate. We'll distinguish between the concentrate, the isolate, and the hydrolysate. What's the advantage of the isolate? Well, whey protein concentrate is whey protein which contains low levels of fat and low levels of carbohydrates. And the problem, you know, it's not bad, but it's sort of the cheaper forms of whey protein or whey protein concentrates. Still, however, they are not broken down into a smaller form. These proteins are large, and they require digestion to be properly assimilated. Whey protein hydrolysate is a pre-digested form of whey, and it's broken down into small amino acids. And it's highly digestible. It's often used in medical protein supplements and infant formulas. And it's hypoallergenic. So for those who have cow or dairy allergy, it is thought to be ideal. We use whey protein isolate because, you know, if you actually break the whey down into individual amino acids, it doesn't necessarily improve on its nutritional value. The isolate is broken down into small polypeptides, di and tripeptides, which are actually been demonstrated to be absorbed often more efficiently than individual amino acids. So we utilize the isolates instead of the hydrolysates. So if you go to drhoffman.com and you Google whey, there's a custom search box usually located on the upper right-hand corner of each page at drhoffman.com. You can find your way to the whey isolate product, and you'll learn that the product is carrageenan-free, which is actually a nice feature because we're concerned about carrageenan as a potential source of problems to people with, especially with gastrointestinal problems, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, but even people who have malabsorption, irritated gastrointestinal tracts, patients who have leaky gut syndrome. That is a concern because carrageenan is pro-inflammatory, and it may induce leaky gut. It may cause irritation of the gastrointestinal tract, and it is something that we want to avoid. It's often used as a something that enhances the mouthfeel and texture of many natural products. So that the good news is that our product contains no carrageenan. Also, it comes from cows, not treated with hormones, so it's organic in that sense. It tastes really good, and I personally prefer the chocolate flavor. The vanilla flavor is pretty good, and if you like vanilla, you might prefer the vanilla flavor, but I find the vanilla flavor requires a little bit of a mixture with perhaps some frozen blueberries to enhance its flavor and balance the vanilla taste. Of course, it's gluten-free. And is it free of hormones? Yes, it is coming from cows not treated with hormones. So the question might be, well, why isn't the whey from grass-fed cows? Isn't grass-fed milk preferable? Well, the answer to that is, I guess they could obtain it from grass-fed cows, but what's the point? In creating whey isolate, all the fat and almost all the carbohydrates are removed. And the major benefits of grass-fed dairy is that when compared to standard dairy, fat balance, the balance between the polyunsaturates and saturated fats, the balance between omega-3 and omega-6 fats is preferable because cows are what they eat. If cows are fed corn, they make milk that is higher in omega-6 fatty acids and lower in omega-3 fatty acids. If they're pasture-fed, they have more in the way of omega-3 fatty acids. In this case, it doesn't matter because there's virtually no fat present in the product. So you needn't worry whether they're from grass-fed cows. So there's no nutritional difference between whey isolate from a grass-fed cow versus non-grass-fed. However, there's a pretty significant difference in the price of the whey, and therefore it's more economical. Way that you take it, you take one level scoop, which contains just 100 calories. You can double up. You can take two scoops if you want. The calories from fat, just 5. The cholesterol is negligible. Total carbohydrate, just 3 grams. And that's the deal. And it's rich in all the amino acids, alanine, arginine, aspartic acid, cysteine, glutamic acid, glycine, histidine, isoleucine, leucine. By the way, isoleucine and leucine and glycine are the so-called branch-chain amino acids, which are highly prized because they are the major constituents of muscle. And there's plenty of those there so that you get your share of muscle-building protein from that product, along with tyrosine. You'll also get methionine and just the full spectrum of phenylalanine of essential amino acids. So that's the product. You mix a level scoop of powder with at least 8 ounces of water, juice, or a preferred beverage daily, as is recommended by your health or fitness professional. And sometimes what I do is I'd use it as a base. I'll put in some flaxseed and I'll put in some a dash of maybe even a few drops of omega-3. I might put in a half an avocado. Avocado actually tastes really good. Put it in with some ice so that it's nicely chilled. Maybe a scoop, a teaspoon or even up to a tablespoon of coconut oil. If you're not worried about the fat content, then you're replacing the zero fat there. You're actually putting some fat in to increase the caloric benefits. But coconut oil is very easily assimilable and really helps people with weight gain. It heals the gastrointestinal tract instead of irritates it. And that's a good thing to put in there, maybe with some fresh frozen fruit, maybe some green powder, if you're one of these folks who's an enthusiast about green powder. You can put in your favorite green powder, maybe a couple of splashes of your favorite juice for athletic recovery. I like tart cherry juice. It seems to have an anti-inflammatory effect, but don't put in too much juice because then you're just going to add a lot of sugar calories, dilute it with water, with ice, and blend it. You can experiment around with different variations on the theme. So what are the benefits of whey protein? Well, in terms of losing weight, there are studies which show, including one in a journal called Nutrition and Metabolism, that people who took a specialized whey fraction. The brand name of that product is called ProLibra, but I guess it's pretty representative of good quality whey proteins. Quote, lost significantly more body fat and showed greater preservation of lean muscle compared to subjects consuming a control beverage. In other words, if you're restricting calories and you, you know, you're on a very stringent diet, you may actually shortchange yourself in terms of usable protein. So whey protein is not a bad adjunct to a weight loss program. Whey protein is also thought to have a beneficial effect in cancer treatment. And one of the reasons for that is that it is rich in precursors for glutathione. The glutathione antioxidant system is the body's number one cellular protective mechanism. And depletion of glutathione is a common consequence of starvation, and also certain forms of chemotherapy. So there's often a malabsorption, loss of appetite, and toxicity, and the body is challenged with highly oxidative free radicals during radiation and chemotherapy. So glutathione repletion is necessary, and glutathione is not that well absorbed. If you, you know, there are various glutathione products you could take orally, liposomal glutathione, and you can take glutathione as a cream, topical cream, and rub that in, but it's still not that well absorbed through the skin. The idea is that glutathione is possibly partially degraded or broken down or digested. So what you actually want to do is you want to deliver the building blocks of glutathione into the system via the individual amino acids, or, you know, the tripeptides or polypeptides that deliver the constituents of glutathione, which are, let's see if I can get this right, glutamine and glycine and of course, cysteine. And that's one of the reasons that N-acetylcysteine is a particular good precursor for glutathione. People with lung diseases are given glutathione via inhalation. It's helpful in our patients who have chronic inflammatory lung diseases. But we also give them lots of NAC, N-acetylcysteine. It's a potent antioxidant in and of its own accord. It helps to reverse Tylenol toxicity. One of the reasons that Tylenol kills your liver is it totally depletes your body of glutathione, and N-acetylcysteine is a good source. Anyway, cysteine is present to a high degree in whey protein. So what they did in this particular paper is they concluded that whey protein concentrate has been shown to represent an effective and safe cysteine donor for glutathione replenishment in immune deficiency states. Animal experiments show that the concentrates of whey proteins also exhibit anti-carcinogenesis and anti-cancer activity. How do they do this? They do this by increasing glutathione concentration, which protects the body against cancer. Ultimately, in patients who we treat for poor immunity, we will also give them intravenous glutathione, but, you know, a shortcut to that. Not everyone can access intravenous glutathione. You can easily replete your glutathione levels with daily intake of whey protein. And the authors of this study conclude this non-toxic dietary intervention will hopefully attract the attention of laboratory and clinical oncologists. That's pretty cool. Whey protein isolates have also been shown to lower cholesterol. According to a study published in the British Journal of Nutrition, there was a significant decrease in total cholesterol, in LDL cholesterol, at week 12 in a group consuming whey powder compared with a group consuming casein. And it wasn't about the fat, because both groups received low-fat or no-fat protein powders. One had casein and one had whey, and it turned out to be more beneficial to use whey to lower cholesterol, and especially LDL cholesterol. Asthma, well, it makes sense because, as we said earlier, Glutathione is beneficial for people with respiratory problems. According to research, whey protein could improve immune response in children with asthma. One study published in the International Journal of Food Science and Nutrition found that children with asthma who were supplemented with whey for 1 month had improved immunity. Additionally, whey may be beneficial for lowering blood pressure and reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease, because research published in the International Dairy Journal found that beverages that were supplemented with whey protein significantly reduced blood pressure in patients with hypertension, and their risk of developing heart disease or stroke was also lower. A study published in the journal Clinical Investigative Medicine found that whey protein helps reduce weight loss among HIV-positive patients because it's an ideal source of protein. And also, these patients are under tremendous oxidative stress due to their viral condition, but also due to the harsh medications that they sometimes take. These medications may have damaging effects on the cells, and whey may rescue the cellular repair mechanisms. Whey seems to stand up well compared to other sources of protein. You know, have many choices of protein, but in a recent study done this year, volunteers who were obese but not yet diabetic, they gave them different kinds of protein, either from whey, gluten, casein, or cod protein, and they found that the meal supplement with whey caused the subject's stomachs to empty slower than the others, thus inducing some degree of satiety, this may help them curb their appetite and lose the requisite weight that will be necessary for them to prevent diabetes. And new research, which is published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition also this year, shows that whey protein, either as a supplement combined with resistance exercise or as part of a weight loss or weight maintenance diet, may provide men and women benefits related to body composition. They analyzed 14 randomized control trials, and they found that that patients on average lost around 9 pounds. And in addition, the participants had a statistically significant increase in lean body mass, especially when whey protein was used in conjunction with resistance exercise. And I'm quoting from the study. They say, there's a growing body of research that supports the benefits of whey protein for weight maintenance and lean body mass. So here it's interesting. We have, on the one hand, whey is beneficial for patients who are underweight, as in the case of part one of today's podcast, where we talked to Grimaldi about her successful weight gain from 74 to 96 and her incredible athletic performance. And on the other hand, for patients who are overweight, it may provide some degree of satiety, and it may also help them, when combined with resistance exercise, not lose muscle when they're restricting calories, and actually lose weight while building muscle. So this is exciting, and suggests that whey has kind of a homeostatic effect on weight. If it's too low, it helps to optimize and helps you to gain optimal weight. And if your weight is above average, you can use whey to curtail your weight gain and lose weight. What about athletic performance? I mean, that's really why a lot of people use whey protein. And, you know, clearly when you exercise, part of exercising is you actually deliberately induce muscle damage. That's how muscles get bigger. They get stressed and damaged to some degree. And then there's a repair process. That's why adequate time allotted to recovery is important if you want to consolidate your gains. That's bodybuilders will tell you. They don't do the same routine 7 days a week. There needs to be a rest phase and a consolidation phase. And usually I recommend that exercisers who want to build muscle and build endurance take a whey protein after a workout. And obviously, you know, eat a healthy meal, balanced of protein, carbohydrates, and healthy fats. The whey is not a substitute for good eating, but it can be sort of an insurance policy. And also, sometimes after a workout, it takes a little time for me to prepare a meal. You know, I'm tired and I'm dragging a little bit, and so it's nice to sidle up to the blender, throw in some whey powder and some other ingredients, and take a whey drink, and then in a leisurely way, prepare some eggs, or get some turkey or some leftover salmon, and have a meal. There's a report on the site of the American Nutrition Association summarizing some of the research. What they say is that prevention of muscle damage is crucial to improving performance and enhancing recovery, and it's been shown that muscle fatigue will occur independent of dehydration and muscle glycogen depletion. So that means you need increasing levels of blood amino acids to recover from exercise. It's not just a matter of, drinking water and taking sugar. You actually need some amino acids after exercise, and whey protein is a good way to deliver them. The evidence for whey protein versus a carbohydrate-only supplementation during exercise is lacking. So it's unclear whether you should be guzzling down whey protein during relatively short bouts of exercise. I know that really long-distance endurance athletes have to consume some protein, like Ironman triathletes, during their workouts. There's a whole science to this because the muscles are so starved and they really require some repair even during the exercise. So just drinking some sugar water may not be adequate. They really haven't nailed this down in terms of what you precisely should be doing during exercise. Some athletes believe in just taking concentrated sugars to provide fuel and to replete the glycogen lost in your muscles, and others believe in using a combination of carbohydrates and protein. Definitely branched-chain amino acids have been shown to reduce muscle damage by providing amino acids for fuel and delaying muscle breakdown for amino acid use. So also, one of the things that happens from exercise is you have a stress response and you get higher levels of cortisol, which actually can have a catabolic effect, prevents you from developing good muscles. And cortisol response is actually lower when branched-chain amino acids are supplemented during exercise. That's been proven. Recovery may occur more quickly. The other benefit is that one of the things that happens with very high levels of exercise is your immunity breaks down because it's a form of stress to the body. And studies have shown that there's enhanced immunity due to attenuation of the stress response that suppresses the immune system that's triggered by exercise. So it can be argued that even if such a solution does not yield immediate post-exercise performance enhancement, in other words, your muscles don't pop up like Popeye after a can of spinach, long-term performance is enhanced by taking whey protein, because it prevents the consequences of overtraining. So the science is less clear as to, should you be slugging down whey protein to make you into a better athlete. But certainly it makes sense to offset the muscle damage and to reduce the body stress response, the immunosuppression caused by exercise, if you use a little bit of whey protein after workout. I mean, for those of you who are just like walking your dog to the mailbox, I'm not sure you need a protein drink afterwards to replete yourself. But anybody involved in serious exercise, an hour or more of strenuous exercise daily, you may want to include whey protein as part of your sports nutrition regimen. For what it's worth, you don't have to be a super athlete to benefit from whey protein. There are actually some studies, there are limited studies, not the most detailed studies or numerically robust studies, looking at the effects of whey protein in patients suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome. But a popular remedy that's turned to by patients with chronic fatigue syndrome is whey protein, because it's a complete protein, and it is also, once again, a precursor for glutathione. And tests indicate those diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome have impaired immunity. Research has shown the ability of lymphocytes to react better in the presence of glutathione. Their immune response is improved with glutathione. That's one of the reasons why we give patients with chronic fatigue syndrome intravenous glutathione, but we want to encourage their use of the amino acid precursors to glutathione so they can, their body can build higher levels of this nutrient. Glutathione is essential to aerobic muscular contraction, and therefore it may actually enhance muscle strength in patients suffering from chronic muscle weakness. And it certainly does help the immune system. So there you have it. That's a pretty good compendium of whey protein research. And part of the rationale for taking whey protein as a daily supplement. Once again, you can find information about what I think is one of the better products, product that we selected for the Hoffman Center store. It's by Thorne, a reliable manufacturer of quality supplements available to health professionals, not usually available directly to consumers in health food stores. And it's something that you can find if you Google whey at drhoffman.com. Check it out. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.